Skyline's new chicken chili is here. Now you can enjoy that legendary Skyline taste with a new protein option. Try Skyline's chicken chili on Waze, Coney's, and all your Skyline favorites. Feeling good. It's Skyline time.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
True crime today.
This is the ongoing story of a small Idaho town and its residents, a tightly knit community that hasn't seen a murder since 2015, an environment where one thought they could feel safe and secure until a quadruple homicide stole the lives of four young souls on a mid-November evening, leaving far more questions than answers. Where will the investigation lead, and how do we get there? This is the University of Idaho Murders podcast. Four killed for what?
Welcome to the podcast. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any episodes of the program or breaking updates as we have them for you here. We're going to continue our conversation with Jennifer Coffendaffer in just a few minutes. We're going to dive into the look at some of the online footprints that Mr. Koberger has recently made, if you will, including the bizarre questions he asked while a student, a criminology student at DeSales University. We'll go to that in just a moment. But first, some audio that came across earlier today. This is from Nancy Grace and Fox Nation. This is some very interesting audio that Nancy got just the other day while having a conversation with one of Koberger's neighbors, describing a conversation that was had during the manhunt for the killer, obviously well before anyone knew that Koberger was the prime suspect, but very interesting and very telling what Koberger said to the neighbor. Again, this is audio from Nancy Grace and Fox Nation. Take a listen.
He actually says, have you heard about the murders?
Yeah, when we were talking right here, he said, have you heard about these murders? And I was like, yeah, because it just happened. He was like, yeah, it seems like they don't have any leads. And I was like, yeah, I guess not. And then he's like, yeah, they think it's a crime of passion. I was like, yeah, well, I don't know. And then he kind of left it at that, but he did bring that up. Like it was a normal conversation.
Just like it was a normal conversation. Just like any conversation you would have with the neighbors. Like, yeah, I think it might go this way or that way. Let me kind of feed you a little bit of information here to kind of, on this track, let me get you over to that track. Another interesting note that was made, and this is an observation that Nancy Grace made yesterday on her program about that conversation regarding the reaction that that neighbor's wife had to Koberger.
Koberger's father moved him in, like when you take somebody to college and your parents move you in, and actually asked the neighbor, hey, will you be his friend? See. Because he couldn't make friends. It's like setting up a play date. And at some point, the neighbor's wife said, don't bring him back. I've got a bad feeling. Do not have him back.
Nancy Grace and Fox Nation asking some very interesting questions and finding some very interesting answers. I mean, how strange is that, that your father would be essentially asking the neighbor to be friends with your 28-year-old son. And I think Nancy said it quite well, like a play date. Like, you know, it'd be one thing, like he's new to town, maybe if you want to be friendly, you know, I don't know. But it seems that there was implied there some sense. And one would imagine that, you know your kid pretty well. And in no way am I trying to be negative towards those parents whatsoever. But yeah, you know your kid and you know he's a little off, but maybe not how off. He truly is with the capability of committing the alleged crimes that he did. With that, let's continue on with our conversation with Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent of 25 years. Another footprint that we've seen online, and this is surely, definitely him from DeSales University when he was doing his criminology study. Some people have argued that the posts that he made there were very typical of a criminology student. And I can see that to a certain extent. But some of his posts ended up being very specific, very much in the mindset almost of if you were stalking prey, which for the study that it seemed to be going on to, didn't necessarily speak specifically to someone stalking prey. It almost seemed like some of those questions were asked for a selfish purpose. What's your take on some of those?
I would have to agree with you. It was almost how I took it when I first read them, was he was trying to understand himself through others who had carried through on committing crime based on their impulses. And it was almost like he wanted to, identify with these mm-hmm. individuals and to explain to himself from what they posted, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Or from what they would have responded.
Almost as if you're in that mindset, you can't feel. You're always trying to take cues from other people. If you're at a party and you don't know how to interact with people, well, how are other people acting? How can I mimic this? It was almost like he was trying to learn to mimic the thought process or the actions of someone who would commit crimes of this nature.
Yeah, and I think just to understand his own mind from other people who had similar mindsets.
Mm-hmm.
So almost supporting his position.
Yeah.
And, I think when that happens, you even more slide into a sense of something that is not normal, making it more normal when other people have the same thoughts and feelings and follow through on them.
It's very hard to wrap your mind around how this person operated, but I think that's almost exactly what it is. What is not normal was his normal. And that's what makes it so confusing to anyone who doesn't seem to have that sort of MO in their way of thinking.
Yeah, no, you say it perfectly. It's very hard for the average person, for the normal person, so to speak, to understand such atrocities. It's so rare for people to commit crime like this. He's in really a category that's very small with others like him that have that capability.
With what we know so far, and we really only know a fraction of what's been released in that probable cause affidavit with everything else being sealed, in your opinion, obviously we have June 26th that we're leading up to, still quite a ways away. Let's assume that there, let me ask you this first, before we go to that, let's qualify. Do you think that there will be a not guilty plea being made here?
Well, of course, at the preliminary hearing, we're going to have the judge rule as to whether there's probable cause that's been established.
Sure.
So that's the big, hurdle that is coming up. And I think she will find probable cause. I would argue this affidavit, well supports, well beyond probable cause.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of any time I've either created, read, or been a part of a probable cause affidavit that's 19 pages long.
Oh.
That has this detail. That's very unusual because the bar is so low for probable cause. So I think she will find that ruling. And based on the information that I've seen, and I think it'll be supported and supplemented by much more, I believe they have an extremely strong case.
If this does in fact go to trial, what kind of defense do you think will be brought on the table for Koberger?
Well, I would expect several experts to try to poke holes in everything to do with the cell phone information. Again, we talked about it earlier, the triangulation and, mm-hmm. Trying to say that that's not as precise a science as the prosecution side will say. I think they will poke holes in the videos because they're going to be grainy. And even though the FBI does a great job of making them as clear as they possibly can be, I think that they will try to poke holes in their video surveillance. I think that a big point that they're going to make, even at the probable cause hearing, will have to do with the FBI expert that said the vehicle they're looking for is a 2011 to 2013. That was a big error. Mm-hmm. I would believe that after they got onto Koberger and they had him reevaluate the videos to see if that could fall in line with the 2015, that we're going to see a supplemental report dated a completely separate date from his first review that is going to show the new date range that he established. And I think the defense will poke holes in that. But really, at the end of the day, anyone can look at the Elantras from 11 through 15 and see how minute the body style differences are. And I think any jury will be able to see through the smoke and mirrors. But believe me, that if I were the defense, I would really try to hone in on that what we're looking for is somebody in a 2011 through 2013 suspect, and that's not my client.
Sure. Until they get the IP address traced back from Facebook where he said, I don't think you should be looking for an Elantra. I think the white car has nothing to do with it.
Like, it's a red herring.
Yeah.
And I love how the term was white car.
Yes, white
almost
car.
I was to just dumb it down throughout. It was white car. He didn't even want to get out there the precise, description of the vehicle, the make and the model. I thought that was interesting.
It is. I believe Koberger is a very smart individual, probably textbook wise. But it seems when it comes to common sense, you're going to see so many of these kind of weird gaffes and goofs that he does, which is probably also why, it was so difficult for him to relate to other human beings and have interpersonal relationships, it seems, most of his life. He is very intelligent, but just not in that area, which does seem to come out in many odd ways.
Well, and I think if you combine that with what would seem to be a narcissistic personality, and narcissists really just don't believe they can get caught.
Sure.
They just think they do everything right. I thought it was interesting. I believe that the cleaning that occurred in Pennsylvania would have been a secondary cleaning instigated by the two car stops.
Yeah.
Surely he had to just be thinking, although you couldn't see it on his face, he had to be thinking, what is happening here that I'm getting stopped twice and could they be on to me? Mm-hmm. And it would seem maybe he did more of a deep cleaning. We don't know, but he had to have cleaned it prior to the road trip because there would have been blood everywhere.
Yes. And that's what I'm wondering. And I'm guessing there's likely probably evidence there, because no matter how well you clean it, if there's blood in your car, there will be trace elements of blood in your car. I would imagine that is being discovered or has been discovered by law enforcement. Would you agree?
Oh, yes, I agree. There's just too many tiny crevices. There's too many tests that are available to law enforcement. If it was there, if he did do this, if he sat in that car bloodied and touched different things, I think they will find the evidence thereof.
When we're looking at all this, there's been a little speculation here and there, some of it seemingly boilerplate language, especially with another one of the affidavits, the discovery affidavit, about co-defendants and things of that nature. But when we do look at other affidavits of that nature for discovery, when there is not a co-defendant, it seems to be in there quite often. Is that what your feelings are at this point on that verbiage in the discovery affidavit?
100%. I believe that discovery affidavit is boilerplate language that's used. I even posted what other boilerplate language that's used in Idaho, and it's almost verbatim.
Sure.
So they throw in the kitchen sink so as not to miss anything. That there was quite a big deal made about that because it was extracted. I know I had to go grab the entire discovery motion. And as soon as I saw the whole motion and that it wasn't a separate motion, it was clear to me it was just boilerplate
Yeah, it was like, give us anything and everything you have, and so we can't say we didn't ask for it. We're going to ask, if you have this, give it to us, essentially.
Yeah, it's just to cover themselves. Mm-hmm. Typically, in this type of a case, everything is going to be given to them on thumb drives and hard drives, actual, these little small kind of hard drives, mm-hmm. That will encompass all this information. This is a terabyte situation. This is a lot of information. I was thinking just of the 22,000 vehicles and all the analysts searches conducted by the FBI agent or the FBI analysts across the country. Oh my goodness. And that's just one small facet of the case. There's going to be so much information for them to go through. We're not going to be in trial for a very long time.
Yeah, that's evident. I think the one thing that really kind of made people raise their eyebrows even more at that was the story that Koberger had said or asked early on when he was arrested. And I don't know if this has been confirmed or not, but it was reported many places of, did they get anyone else? Did they arrest anyone else? He said something to that nature. What does that say to you? Is that just him being him, or is there something else to that?
Well, initially when that was first reported, and it was reported very strongly by great sources, mm-hmm. That law enforcement told them that, I initially thought there could be someone else involved. That was what initially my mind went to. Then right after that, I thought, oh boy, is this a situation that it's a complete ruse? Is he just saying that to throw their suspicion that more than, you know, Mr. Koberger would be involved? And then I thought perhaps he was concerned about his father being involved in sort of a harboring situation, because they did the cross country trip together and he was staying at his house. Maybe his mind went to, I wonder if they arrested my dad or my mother because I was here.
Sure.
So we don't know. I believe the statement happened, but we're not sure as to what his intent was.
With the personality type that we seem to see here, the narcissist and things of that nature, now behind bars, probably still very likely surprised that he was caught. What do you think is going through his mind as he sits in jail?
Well, the reality of being in jail seems to be hitting him hard. There's certainly a different persona that we're seeing in his court appearance compared to the first appearance. He's in solitary confinement, which is so difficult on people. His diet, no matter if they've offered some sort of vegan option, is still nothing compared to what is available, obviously, on the outside. Those cells are very small. And so it's going to take a huge toll on him mentally as well as physically. As to what he is thinking, I would believe, based on the fact he is intelligent and he is apparently good at researching and good at, academic side of things, that he would be vigorously helping his defense team, providing information as to what could possibly exonerate him. Look, that house, and I think this is going to be a big deal, that house was open territory for parties, as we've seen in body cam after body cam. Mm-hmm. It's no secret. And I think he's going to try to place himself there to explain the sheath, to explain anything else they've been able to find, to explain the footprint. I think he's going to try to say, listen, I was at a party. I was there.
And with that being said, it kind of ties into my last question. Do you have any theories as to how he actually knew the victims? That seems to be one many of us are very stuck on. And I know you dig deeper than most. That's why I want to ask you that question.
Well, I have to say I'm troubled with that question. And I'll tell you why. Very early on, Mr. Goncalves said that there was a link.
Yeah.
And Mr. Goncalves has been pretty spot on. Yeah. You know, he was the first to disclose Maddie and Kaylee being in the same bed. He was he discussed the difference in wounds between Maddie and Kaylee. He discussed going up the stairs. You know, why did he have to go up those stairs? He made statements that I believe he knew the answers to based on law enforcement disclosures. And so when he made that statement that there was a connection between Kaylee and Mr. Koberger, I took that at face value, believing that, because it was kind of a spontaneously uttered. Usually we use that language when we're talking about a confession, but just somebody that says something off the cuff. And that's how I took that. And I took that as that's what he thought. Later, the attorney has come back and said, no, you know, there is no connection. So I'm still bothered by that, because it seems that he thought there was a connection. Maybe they've discerned that there isn't. So as far as how he came upon them, you know, there was one social media site that I viewed. Now it's not available. It's down, where I believe it is possible they had a connection in terms of Mr. Koberger might have been following one or more of the individuals in that house. Again, it's, you know, here in this day of the ability of individuals to create false accounts and false information without those subpoena powers to be able to unequivocally say, I can't say for certain, but I know I physically saw that with my own eyes, that he was following a couple of them. But was that a conjured up account? I don't know.
Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your insight. Always love hearing that. And if you want to follow her on Twitter, please do. She's got great insights on this case. I've been following her since the very beginning. You can follow her at Coffendaffer FBI on Twitter. That's Coffendaffer FBI on Twitter. That's going to wrap up this conversation on this episode of the podcast. If you would like to listen to our show commercial free, there's an option for you for that on Apple Podcasts right now. You can even try that for 3 days free. Do appreciate that support. You can follow me on Twitter at Tony B Pod. Until next time, for all of us here at True Crime Today and the University of Idaho Murders Podcast, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.